Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by Lama Kathy Wesley, is entitled Prayers for a Pandemic, Part 2. In the second talk given during the COVID-19 epidemic, Lama Kathy reviews the previous week's meditation exercises and talks about the comforting power of prayer and specific things meditators can do to work with thoughts and feelings that arise in times of trouble. The audio was drawn from her video webcast from home. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Okay. Hi, everybody. So thanks to everybody who joined us last week for our talk on prayers for a pandemic, part one. And I hope that you have had a good week and that you are holding up all things considered with all that's going on. And I hope that that you have been able to get some stability inside your mind, even though the exterior circumstances are less than perfect. I know you've been probably watching the news this week, and if so, try to cut down, you know, because I was reading a mental health article today, and they were saying that one of the best things you can do for yourself in the midst of all that's going on is to limit the amount of exposure you have to the news. So what you might want to try is try to maybe do just a little less news and a little more fresh air and sunshine and things like this. So that's the mental health PSA for today. So now I'm going to continue the topic we started last week. Last week, if you remember, we talked a little bit about the Buddhist teachings on the mind, and that mind is the seat of all of our experience, and that if we want to change our experience of the world, we need to change our minds. And so that's what we started with last week. And we also talked a little bit about how to work with the mind and how to tame the mind. We went over those quotations from the Buddhist teaching where he said, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. So we talked about that, and we talked about how quieting the mind through the practice of meditation is a practice that we can do in order to stabilize our mind and to do less of the things that are troubling to us, and also to provide some space and room inside our minds so that we can be more effective in taming and working with ourselves. So in any case, that's a little bit about what we talked about last week. This week, I wanted to, the other thing we did last week was we started talking about quieting the body and the mind in the midst of all this psychological and external turmoil. And we talked about how you can calm your body down by doing some deep breathing exercises. And I shared the deep breathing exercises that I had learned from the Tibetan doctor, Akong Tarap, otherwise known as Akong Rinpoche. And so we practiced a little of that last week and learned a little of that last week as well. So we talked about calming the body, calming the exterior circumstances, reducing the news, and so forth and so on. And then also working with our moment, which is what in the practice of quiet sitting meditation. So that's a little recap of what we talked about last week. And I'm going to start now with a short prayer in the Tibetan language. And if it's a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in at home. And if it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to the benefit of all suffering beings.
Sanje Chudong Sochi Chonam La Changchu Bardu Dani Kyapsuchi Daji Jinso Jipe Sonam Ji Drola Pinchir Sanje Drupar Sho.
Now the prayer of the four immeasurables. Semchen tamche dewa tan tewe gyutan tempar gyuche dunga tan dunga gi jutan trawa juje dunya mebe dewa tamba tam hindrawa juje nerin chandan tan drawe tonyen chempola nepa juche. Okay, and then one last prayer supplication and blessing, asking for the presence of the gurus and the lineage masters.
O palden sawe lama rinpoche, dagi chiur pede tenchala, kardin jembo guaneche sunte, kusun togi ngutrup sal duso.
Okay, thank you. So this week we want to talk a little bit about the things that you can do with your mind once it is somewhat tamed. And if you weren't unable to watch last week, we started talking about taming the mind through talking about the practice of shamatha meditation or calm abiding. And to do calm abiding, we allow our body to rest in a comfortable posture, and then we place our attention on the breath as it comes in and as it goes out. And by placing our attention on the breath as it comes in and as it goes out, we cultivate attention. And by cultivating our attention, we can have a short period of attention. And that short period of attention may not be long, but it will be a beginning point for our practice of mindfulness and meditation. So when you're watching the breath come in and go out over and over again, what you're getting is a short period of attention on the breath. And that what will happen is that will last for a short period of time, a few seconds or maybe even a minute or longer. But at some point, as you are observing the breath quietly like this, your attention will waver and your attention will wander off into the past, perhaps something that happened yesterday, or maybe it'll wander into the future, something that's going to happen tomorrow, or maybe it will be distracted by something that's happening in the current moment, a feeling or a thought, or maybe your body is itching or something like this. And the work of meditation is to notice that wandering and then to redirect one's attention back to the breath for a fresh start. So we're watching the breath in meditation, and then that attention is a little bit, maybe it's a little fatigued, and then we get distracted by something. And then the moment we recognize that we are distracted, we stop, and then we place our attention on the distraction or the thought or the feeling momentarily. And we can even label it thinking, and then we can let go of it. And then return our attention to the breath for a fresh start. And then again, establish watching the breath and so on. And so I guess what we mentioned last week was that one session of quiet sitting meditation, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour or even longer, is really broken up into shorter separate, discrete mini meditations. Of this type, where you're attentive for a period, then you lose attentiveness, then you return. And by noticing and returning over and over again, we train the mind. We train it and tame it to notice. So the first stage of practicefulness is noticing. And what you'll notice is that you think a lot. I have people tell me, oh, I didn't realize I was thinking so much until I started meditating. And then after they do that for a while, then they start to say, wow, I didn't know I was thinking about this, or I was thinking about that. I didn't realize I think about these things so much. In other words, they're beginning to identify the themes of their thinking, the themes of their distractions, the themes that they are repeating over and over again in their minds. And these themes and ideas and thoughts are what influences their experience of the world. So this is how you would begin the practice of understanding how your thoughts create your experience. So that's where we begin. But once our mind is a little bit tame, just a little bit tame, what might happen is that we might begin to notice that that period of attention to the breath gets a little longer and that the distractions get a little shorter. And this is good news because it means that we are getting better at noticing, letting go of distraction, noticing distraction, letting it go, and then returning. And so if we can do this over and over again, then we can begin to make some changes. And this is making change in your mind is not a big deal. It's not something you have to make some huge commitment to do. It's something you've already done when you're sitting in meditation and that thought comes up and you're able to label it thinking, let go of it, and then return. You've already changed your mind in that moment. You've already succeeded in doing the job of changing your mind. So that hopefully will give you a little encouragement. And after you do this over and over again, then you can begin to insert into your daily thought patterns positive things that will, I guess, increase your virtuous mind, your virtuous thought patterns. And so this is the function of prayer. Now, you remember the name of this, the topic of this teaching was Prayers for a Pandemic. And we started with the idea that we feel we need extra help in these days. And I spoke a little bit last week about taking refuge, having taken refuge in the Buddha as our teacher, the Dharma as the path, and the Sangha as our community, that gives us a basis for confidence that we can slowly uncover and work with our Buddha nature that's within all of us. And so as a result, changing our mind then needs a lot of help. We need a lot of extra help for that. And one of the ways to bring extra help to our mind is through prayer. Now, if you remember last week, I was talking about my teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche's comment about prayer. I often tell this story. I asked him, well, what's Buddhist prayer all about? Because Buddhism is famously non-theistic. The Buddha didn't teach about a God and didn't teach about how to relate to God. So it's called non-theistic. Well, if there's no God figure, then to whom are we praying and what are we praying for? And Kempo Rinpoche's answer was, he said, well, I don't fully understand Christian prayer, but he says, I think that you're praying to someone who was not like you and who you could never become like, and you are praying to receive something that you don't have, that the God is capable of giving you. But in Buddhism, we're praying to someone who was once like us and wants nothing more than for us to become like them. And what we're praying for is the uncovering of our own awakened nature and the realization of our own awakened nature. So this is a little bit about Buddhist prayer. As I mentioned last week, there were several kinds of Buddhist prayer. There are aspiration prayers where we aspire to awakening for the benefit of others. There's the taking of refuge, the prayer of taking refuge. Buddhists do this every morning and every evening. I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha from now until enlightenment is reached, and so on. And then there are prayers of supplication, where we ask specifically for the blessings of the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas, and our gurus or our teachers. And by making these prayers of supplication, we are essentially opening our minds to receiving the influence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. How can they help us now? Well, if you believe in past and future lives, then there is a potential for the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to be somewhere now and can hear all of our wishes and can turn themselves toward us. Actually, we turn ourselves toward them. It's kind of that direction. They are like radiating love and compassion 24/7 everywhere. In fact, of the previous Kala Rinpoche, when he was asked about Buddhist prayer, he said, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are like the TV a radio tower on the hill that is broadcasting 24/7 love, compassion, and wisdom. And then if we pray to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we're tuning our set to receive their picture. So that's what I mean when I say we're opening ourselves to the blessing of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Because if you think about it, just saying, Buddha, may I become like you, may love, compassion, and bodhicitta arise in my mind, it's actually already arisen the moment you thought of it. And the blessings can grow and flourish and expand because we do this every day. And repeating refuge prayers morning and evening, and then supplicating the Buddha in between, it can be a very powerful thing. So prayer is something that we can use to turn our mind toward the spiritual life. Now, those of you who are familiar with our home monastery at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra in Woodstock, New York, you know that last night and then again tonight, Kempo Ugin Tenzin is going to be sharing teachings about a specific prayer that was recommended by the 17th Karmapa to help us in the time of pandemic. And I don't know if the camera will show this right side forward or inside or backwards, but let's just see if it does. I don't know. This is the prayer that saved Sakya. And this is the teaching that Kempo Ugin Tenzin is sharing. And you can download this. I will put this on my Facebook page as soon as this broadcast is done. And then I will also put a copy of it on a link to it on the YouTube page. So you'll see the prayer in both locations. And Kempo Ugin Tenzin is giving, he started last night and will continue tonight, a commentary on this prayer. So I think it will not be necessary for me to repeat anything about what he's saying, but I'd like to share the story of how this prayer came about that's printed at the end of the prayer itself. Often Tibetan prayers and religious texts have a paragraph at the beginning or the end or both that explain how the text came to be written. And this one says at the end, once an epidemic was spreading from one person to the next at the great monastery of the glorious Sakya tradition. This would have been the 14th century. Whatever the mantric masters tried, effigies, tormas, medicines, mantras, protection amulets, and so on, had no effect, and the monastery was in danger of annihilation. At that time, the master Mahasiddha, Tongtong Gyalpo, performed the refuge prayer, which begins, sentient beings in number as vast as space. That's the first line of the prayer. That's the name of the prayer is its first line. And then recited a number of Om Mani Padme Hum mantras, and then said, following the teacher's words, these aspirations become reality. At that time, the entire epidemic immediately ceased in dependence upon the performance of this prayer. Thereby, it became renowned as the Vajra speech radiating cloud-like blessings entitled The Prayer That Saved Sakya from Disease. And so this particular prayer text, which was produced by our friends at, I believe this was done at KTD Monastery or through the Karmeling Retreat Center, starts with a refuge prayer, the refuge prayer referred to in the description. My mothers, all sentient beings throughout space, go for refuge to the gurus, the precious Buddhas. We go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We go for refuge to the gurus, Yidams, and Dakinis. We go for refuge to, ultimately, our own mind, the empty, clear Dharmakaya, and the aspiration that may all the diseases that disturb the minds of sentient beings and which result from karma and temporary conditions, such as the harms of spirits, illnesses, and elementals, never occur throughout the realms of this world. May whatever sufferings arise due to life-threatening diseases, which, like a butcher leading an animal to the slaughter, separate the mind from body in a mere instant. May these never occur throughout the realms of this world. May all embodied beings remain unharmed by acute, chronic, and infectious diseases. the mere names of which can inspire the same terror as would be felt in the jaws of Yama, the Lord of Death. May the 80,000 classes of harmful obstructors, the 360 types of evil spirits that harm without warning, the 440 types of disease and so forth, never cause harm to any embodied being. May whatever sufferings might have radiance and power and be endowed with long life, good health, and well-being. By the compassion of the gurus and the three jewels, the power of the dakinis, the dharma protectors and guardians, and by the strength of the infallibility of karma and its results, may these many dedications and prayers be fulfilled as soon as they are made. So this type of prayer, by making this type of prayer and making it every day, you might say, well, what good does that do? How does that change an epidemic that seems to be out of human control? It's probably beyond my pay grade as an elementary school teacher in Dharma. I guess essentially like, you know, a teacher's aide in elementary school Dharma. It's kind of beyond me to be able to explain how this can impact the greater world at large, except to say that what the Buddha's teaching said, we are what we think, all that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world, means that at least, even if we cannot impact the greater world, we can impact our inner world and have more peace of mind and less fear when we recite prayers and meditations. Because prayers and meditations work inside of us. And by working inside of us, it helps us to change our experience of the moment. We can't necessarily make illness vanish like this within ourselves, but what we can do is change how we see illness, how we work with illness, and what it is to us. And so prayer in that way may or may not have an impact on the greater world at large, but I would be very interested to know what it would be like if everyone on the planet engaged in meditation and prayer. Because if people in the planet engage in meditation and prayer, they change each of their individual worlds. And hopefully this will have an impact on the greater world at large. But of course, we no matter what we pray about, we can also do all of the things we need to do for our health, such as washing hands and staying isolated as we need to be and so on. So prayer is just something we do to help our minds. There are lots of other kinds of prayer that we can recite. One of the things we can do is recite some of the great masters' words of the past. And one of the books, and again, I don't know if this will show forward or backward on the video, is The Way of the Bodhisattva. The Way of the Bodhisattva, which was written in the 8th century by the Indian saint Shantideva, this great text, talks about how to train our minds in love and compassion. This is the second topic, because prayer is just the first way that we can work with and change our thinking. The second way we can change our thinking and our mind is by training the mind in love and compassion. And love and compassion were given by the Buddha as methods of training so that we ourselves can be less self-centered. Because if you remember from last week, we talked about the Four Noble Truths. And the first of the Four Noble Truths is that suffering is part of life. And the second of the Four Noble Truths is that suffering has a cause. And then the third is that it has a solution. And the fourth is the path, Noble Truth, the cause of suffering. What we can do is that is that the cause of suffering is our clinging and fixation. This was the Buddhist teaching, that it was clinging and fixation that was the cause of our suffering. And so if we can let go of clinging and fixation, then we will have less suffering. And so the teaching about love and compassion is that love and compassion are the easiest things to train the mind in that will have the greatest impact on suffering and its causes. Because of all of the things we cling to our sense of self, me or I, we cling to that the most. And so if we can find a way to reduce clinging to self, then we will find a way to reduce the causes of suffering right at their root. And so by learning love, we come out of ourselves. We think about others more than we think about ourselves. And so this is the second method for helping our minds in difficult times. The first is meditation. Second is prayer. Third is the practice of love and compassion. And so I got my numbers mixed up just there, but we were talking about taming the mind and then training the mind. And when we train the mind, we can train it with prayer and we can train it with love and compassion. So I think I got my numbers back together there. But the main method of practice is for love and compassion is called training the mind in bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening and citta means the mind, mind of awakening. And so you want to know what this book, The Way of the Bodhisattva, has to do with love and compassion. Well, that's the main topic of the entire book. And if you wish to train in love and compassion, you need a method. You need a method for practicing love and compassion, because a lot of us have naturally occurring love and compassion for the people we feel close to. But then we have pretty much the opposite of love and compassion for people we don't feel close to, or for people who we think of as being enemies, or people who are opposed to us. And so there's a whole group of people we don't have compassion for, and therefore we have to train in it. The method of training in love and compassion is what is explained in The Way of the Bodhisattva. And so what I tell people to do when they want to train in this and they would like to learn about it, I ask them to read books such as this, The Way of the Bodhisattva, in order to get the method. But even if you don't have the time to practice all the methods, you can at least read some of the chapters out loud. I met a person once who said that he had some real doubt in Buddha nature, like maybe Buddha nature existed for other people, but not for him. And I suggested that he read chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, and chapter 10 of The Way of the Bodhisattva as an exercise in repetition. The first chapter is about the benefits of bodhicitta, and the second and third chapters are offerings, confessions, and taking the bodhisattva vow. And then the 10th chapter is the author, Shantideva's aspirations for all of the wonderful things that might happen as a result of him having taught the way of the bodhisattva. And so I really, really recommend this book to people. Just read it out loud or get it. I know we have watch parties on Facebook and watch parties on YouTube, but we can also have reading parties. So read it to yourself, make a recording and then play it for yourself. It's really beautifully written and it's kind of lovely. One of my favorite things to read from this are the offerings that are in the second chapter. I think probably I would use up all my time if I read the entire book from here. But there is a lovely thing in here. Let me see if I can find it quickly. I may or may not be able to find it quickly. Yeah, here we go. This is in chapter 3, verse 8. For all those ailing in the world, until their every sickness has been healed, may I myself become for them the doctor, the nurse, the medicine itself. Raining down a flood of food and drink, may I dispel the ills of thirst and famine. And in the ages marked by scarcity and want, may I myself appear as drink and sustenance. For sentient beings, poor and destitute, may I become a treasure ever plentiful and lie before them closely in their reach, a varied source of all that they might need. My body thus and all my goods besides, and all my merits gained and to be gained, I give them all away, withholding nothing to bring about the benefit of beings. Nirvana is attained by giving all, Nirvana, the objective of my striving. Everything, therefore, must be abandoned, and it is best to give it all to others. So anyway, it's just I could just go on and read chapter three all afternoon, but you get the picture. The idea is that by reading things like this that are inspiring to yourself and working with your own mind to try to put some more positive and virtuous things on your mind, if you can do that, this will help you to cope in these difficult days. There are other things that you can practice as well, other prayers that you can practice as well. Besides reading the way of the Bodhisattva, besides reading the sayings of the Buddha, the Dhammapada, and besides reading this prayer, the prayer that saves Sakya, you can recite something called a mantra. And we talked about mantras a little bit last week. Om Mani Padme Hum, or Om Mani Padme Hum. That's the Sanskrit pronunciation, and the Tibetan one is Om Mani Padme Hum. This is a way of saying the name of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of Compassion. This is according to the teaching by Bokha Rinpoche in his book, Chenrezi, Lord of Love. Om is signifies the enlightened mind of the Buddha. The enlightened body of the Buddha, and Hong, the enlightened mind of the Buddha. And so Mani means jewel and Peme means lotus. So the jewel and the lotus are held in by Chenrezi in iconography. The jewel is symbolic of our Buddha nature, which if we realize it, will give us everything we want and need. And the lotus is symbolic of the love, compassion of a bodhisattva. And so being able to recite the name of Chenrezi, Om Mani Padme Hum, we can place our mind on something very positive and through that begin to recognize our own Buddha nature. I often use the analogy, and I may have talked about this last week, of a tuning fork. If you have two tuning forks tuned to the same note, if you strike one and hold it up, you don't even have to touch it with the other one for the other to start vibrating. So by reciting prayers and mantras and so on, we actually begin to activate our own Buddha nature and begin to develop and nurture ourselves in a positive way. So that's a little bit about prayer and meditation and mantra. And also wanted to mention the Medicine Buddha mantra. Teata Om Bekanze Bekanze Maha Bekanze Radza Samungate Soha. And again, Teata is a phrase saying, may it be thus, or thus it is. And then the names of Medicine Buddha are recited. And then Radza Samungate Soha, so hail to he who holds the precious medicine. And Soha means may it be so. And so by reciting the name of the Medicine Buddha, we also can bring about some goodness for ourselves. And in fact, if you feel depressed and you feel some difficulty within yourself, you can visualize a small image of the Medicine Buddha, just a very small, not very big at all, in your heart. And it's made of light and it's radiating blue light, the blue light of lapis lazuli, healing. And you can imagine that light your fears and concerns, and that it gives you strength and healing. So most of us may or may not be sort of attuned to our bodies very much, and so as a result, we may feel a little more anxiety about illness than other people, and so this will help us at least with the anxiety. And so it's something that we can practice. Now, at the Columbus KTC, we have the capability of giving instruction in the Medicine Buddha practice, and we're going to be working on getting that done and over the upcoming weeks. And then, of course, Kenpo Urgen Tenzin has also announced that as part of his Saturday and Sunday evening Dharma teachings, he's also going to be teaching about the Medicine Buddha. So this is something we can look forward to on our virtual Dharma Center, which is the virtual Dharma Center is what we create with each other through these social medias. So so that is the main body of the discussion of prayer. Now there's one more thing I wanted to address, and that was the practice of Tonglen, sending and receiving. It's a form of compassion meditation that I think can also be helpful at this particular time. The as I mentioned earlier, training the mind in love and compassion is something that we have to do consistently, probably daily. Just like our quiet sitting meditation, we have to train our mind in love and compassion every day. And we can use our imagination to help us to train the mind in love and compassion. And so we can use the same technique that we used in calm abiding or shamatha. We can actually place our attention on the breath as it comes out and goes in, and place an intention on the breath as it comes out and goes in. The typical way this is taught is to think that as one breathes out, one imagines that one is sending goodness to all sentient beings, and that they receive that goodness, and that it makes them happy. And that as one breathes in, one removes from them all of their pain and suffering and all of their difficulty. And that by doing this, we open our attitude toward others instead of closing our attitude toward others, which is often what happens when we see someone who's suffering and we feel overwhelmed by their suffering. We tend to close down and distance ourselves from them emotionally because it's just too hard to be present with their pain. And so this technique of using your imagination to imagine removing the suffering from others and giving them happiness is a technique that has been used for centuries upon centuries and comes from the teachings of the Buddha himself in order to train our attitude to be different. So what I'd like to do now is, if you have a minute, I would like to read into this discussion today Kempo Carter Rinpoche's instructions on Tonglen. You can find these in his book, Dharma Paths, which is over on the shelf. This is the old edition. Thank you, Tom Earlywine. Beautiful book design. But on page 118 and 119 of Dharma Paths, Kempo Carter Rinpoche talks about this method for using your imagination in order to train yourself in love and compassion. So he says, when you do this short meditation, first sit in the meditation posture, relaxing your body and sitting comfortably. Then breathe normally, following the natural course of your breath. Imagine that with the exhalation of your breath, whatever merit you have accumulated from beginningless time are accumulating now and will accumulate in all future time, radiates toward all sentient beings. Just as when the sun shines, the rays of light radiate toward all places, so with your exhalations, these positive qualities radiate, bringing happiness, well-being, comfort, health, and longevity to all beings without discrimination. Then, when you inhale, imagine that you're inhaling confusion, sickness, turmoil, and conflict of sentient beings. All of the suffering and turmoil of sentient beings merges with you, and this uproots the suffering and confusion of those sentient beings. Now, because of the strength of bodhicitta, the power of your sincere attitude of wanting to benefit beings, as soon as the suffering merges with you, it dissolves into nothing and disappears. It is just as if you had collected some dust together into a little pile and a strong wind came and blew it away. Inhaling and exhaling in this way, meditate for a short time. So, what Kempo Rinpoche is doing here is he's giving us a multi-step meditation. He's saying, as you breathe out, imagine that you're giving goodness to all beings everywhere. And that it's like sunlight. And you know how the sun spills out over the horizon when the sun comes up? It's like that, where it spills out and pervades all of space. This is really a very brilliant thing because it is a way of saying to us, you, sentient being, confused though you may be, your love and your compassion has that power. It has the power to go everywhere, pervade everywhere. Your Buddha nature is vast and powerful, and your love can go as far as you can imagine and farther. And so when we do this, we have this sense that that all beings are benefiting. And we're sort of radiating like the sun, which doesn't think about radiating, it just radiates. And so we're practicing unconditional love for all beings. Now, if you've got people that you have a little problem with, you can put them out there in the crowd of all sentient beings. You can maybe put them in the back at first, but then you can bring them closer to the front as you get good at this. But at the very least, even the people that you feel you are different from, or you feel threatened by, or you dislike, or whatever, or who have harmed you, you can actually imagine that they're out there and receiving your love in a very powerful way that does not hurt you. So then when you breathe in, he's asking you to remove all the sufferings of the world. Now, I know that might seem like more than you can stand, but we're using our imagination here. I mean, we can imagine a sumptuous banquet, but when we open our eyes, it's still a pretty simple fare. But when we imagine all that negativity coming to us, did you see what Kemper Rinpoche told us to do as soon as it touches us? First of all, we think that it's removed from them, right? And then we think that they're relieved and made happy by that. And then after they're relieved and happy, when all of that negativity comes to us, remember what he said? He said, because of the strength of bodhicitta, the power of your sincere attitude of wanting to benefit beings, as soon as the suffering merges with you, it dissolves into nothing and disappears. And so he's showing us that in Buddha nature, our Buddha nature is so amazing, vast, and yet unestablished as a material thing. The Buddha nature is not made of atoms or molecules. It's beyond all of those descriptors. That it has the power to give love to all beings unconditionally, and it has the power to remove suffering from them unconditionally. And it also has the power for all of that suffering to dissolve into nothing and disappear. And so by meditating like this, there's no harm that comes to us, and yet great benefit comes to us, and that our mind is stretched both in giving and receiving. So Kemper Rinpoche says that it's a short meditation. And he never gave a time for how long you should do this short meditation of sending and receiving. He didn't say. So I made up a way of doing it. I counted 21 beads on my prayer beads, my set of prayer beads. And then I would use them as a timer. In breath, out breath, move a bead. In breath, out breath, move a bead, and so on. This is maybe 2 or 3 minutes of meditation. And then at the conclusion, once I have gotten to the end of the beads, the 21 beads or the 21 cycles of in and out breath, I think that's a good enough time to get the visualization in your heart and mind, but not so much that you become fatigued and distracted. So after you've done as much of this practice as you plan to do, now listen to what Rinpoche says you should do next. He says, inhaling and exhaling in this way, meditate for a short time. After you have meditated in this way for a short while, let go of the mental focus, meaning what you're visualizing. Let go of the mental focus and let your mind rest in a state of awareness. Attempt to have the sense that there are no sentient beings to meditate on, there is no person meditating, and there is no active meditation taking place. try to transcend these three, which are relative, and give birth to something ultimate, something effortless and spontaneous, like the arising and disappearing of clouds in the sky. Just remain in a state of clarity. There is no act, no thought of doing something outside or inside, no you doing something. Just cut off all of that and remain in a state of awareness. And so, so what we are doing then is we're using our imagination to give goodness to all beings and to remove suffering from all beings. And this trains our attitude gradually and slowly into being slightly less selfish and slightly more selfless. Even if we just do it with our imagination, we're still doing it. And that over time, this attitude of wishing to be a benefit of others could begin to pervade other aspects of our life as well. And this is how we can use meditation to transform us. By doing quiet sitting, we learn about our thoughts and how our thoughts influence our thinking. Through the practice of prayer, we begin to put more positive and virtuous thoughts into our everyday mind stream. And then through the practice of mind training, which is called Lojong, Lojong in Tibetan, and through Lojong, we begin to train our attitude to being less selfish and more selfless. And this is what our teachers have told us for a very long time, is that when we're selfish, we're very tight, we're very fearful. We're always worried about giving away too much or having too many people asking things of us. And when we can slowly let go of that grip, then we can begin to have a different view of ourselves, perhaps a more expanded view. Maybe the more expanded view that Kemper Rinpoche is talking about in that paragraph on page 118 and 119, where he's saying, be able to transcend those things which are relative and give birth to something ultimate. Now, I see that I'm running low on time, so I want to make sure that I get one more point in before we finish for today. And that is that that this is not just something we can practice while we're on our meditation seat. We don't just have to only do this on our meditation seat. This is something we can do while we're walking around in our everyday life. And the method for this was given in the 10th century when Atisha began to teach mind training in Tibet, and then was developed in the 11th and 12th centuries by the disciples of the disciples of Atisha in such texts as the Eight Stanzas of Thought Transformation by Longri Tangpa, which the Dalai Lama has taught from extensively. The Eight Stanzas of Thought Transformation is a marvelous book that in just eight very quick verses teaches us how to put others first and how to work with our own pain and suffering. The Seven-Point Mind Training by Chikawa Yeshe Dorje is another book. This was written, I think, 11th or 12th century, that also talks about how to train the mind in love and compassion. And in the 19th century, Jamgon Kontrol the Great, and the book that he wrote became a classic, and it's one of the best books on mind training available in English today. It's called The Great Path of Awakening. And in The Great Path of Awakening, Tong Lin is taught a slightly different formulation than Kemper Rinpoche teaches it here. But the same theme, the idea of sending goodness and removing suffering. And then in everyday life, there is a teaching that Chikawa Yeshe Dorje gave. And he says Chikawa Yeshe Dorje's seven-point mind training is seven sections that have a total of 59 mind training slogans in them. So there's 59 mind training slogans that are divided into seven subheadings. And under the second subheading, the actual practice of bodhicitta, Chikao Yeshe Dorje teaches Tonglen as well as meditation on what's called ultimate bodhicitta, which is this resting the mind in a non-conceptual way. But then he also teaches how to practice when you're not meditating, how to practice when you're walking around in your everyday life. And in that section, I mean, we all need to know how to practice when we're not on our meditation seat, because let's face it, we're not on our meditation seats all day, every day. And so what do we do? What do we do when we're not meditating? And the slogan, the 12th century slogan says, three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. Now, these slogans are a little bit mysterious, and they're written this way so that they're easy to memorize. Three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. The three objects, according to John Gunn-Contrell's explanation, the three objects are things we like, things we don't like, and things we're indifferent toward. And the three poisons are attachment, aversion, and ignorance. And so when we meet those three objects, we develop those three poisons. Things we like, we want to gather to us. Things we don't like, we want to get away from. And then virtually everything else we're indifferent toward. And so what John Gunn-Contrell explained in his teaching on this is that he said, notice what's going on in your mind. Notice that you are feeling one of these three poisons. Notice when you are feeling attachment. Notice when you're feeling aversion. And notice when you're sort of dull and indifferent. And then he said, make use of that feeling. Don't just give in to it and let it run away with you. And don't let it run away with you. Instead of letting it run away with you, take hold of it and transform it. And how you do this, John Gunn-Contrell the Great was just a genius of presentation. He gave little scripts, you know, he wrote little scripts, little things that you can recite to yourself when these things happen. I guess you would call them helpful hints. I mean, if they had had Xerox copiers back in 19th century Tibet, he would have told people to Xerox them. You know, to Xerox these and then laminate them and put them in their pocket. But, you know, that's something we can do today. They would commit them to memory. So he said, if you're feeling attachment and you recognize that you're feeling it, think like this. May my attachment contain the attachment of all sentient beings. By my working through this moment of attachment, may I and all sentient beings be free of it. And by doing this practice, may all of us become Buddhas. It's kind of simple like that. I'm trying to think if I have my copy of the book right here. It doesn't look like I have my copy of the book. But so that's not a precise quote, but you can look in the book and check out that particular paragraph. But he's essentially saying, don't just let your feelings and thoughts run away with you. Be discerning. And so what I tell people to do is stop and identify how you're feeling. Like, don't just believe in the story, like that person did me wrong, or I should have had this, and so forth. Instead, think, oh, wait a minute. I'm responding to this with anger or attachment or aversion, and it's never helped before. So maybe I should try to do something different. And so that's the first step. And then you can actually think, may my anger or my attachment or whatever, may my anger or attachment contain the anger and attachment of all beings. It's as though your anger and attachment become like a little vacuum cleaner and vacuum up all of the anger and attachment in the universe, which, because your mind is unestablished as a material thing, is entirely possible. So you imagine that you take it on, and after taking it on, you think, now that I have done this, may I and all beings be free of it. You make that aspiration. So you identify it, imagine you take on. So the first step is you identify it. And secondly, you imagine that you take on all of the sufferings of all beings. And then you make the aspiration. May I and all beings be free of it, And may we all become Buddhas, which is the complete freedom from this negativity. And so by doing this, you identify how you're feeling and you don't let it run away with you. You identify it and then you make the aspiration, may I and all beings be free of it. And you dedicate that to Buddhahood. May we become Buddhas, which is the complete freedom from this. And so I recommend to people that they write this method down or look it up in the book and recite it to themselves every day. Because if you keep this with you every day and read it every day, then gradually it will become available to you when you need it. So let's say that you're reading the news, or you're watching the news, or you feel really angry about what's going on, or you see someone who's suffering and you just feel so overwhelmed. At that moment, it's really hard, but you can gradually learn how to say, wait a minute, this is an opportunity to practice the three objects slogan, and then say, may my suffering contain the suffering of all beings. And by my working through this suffering, may I and all beings be free of it. And may we all become Buddhas, which is the complete freedom from suffering. And in that way, what we were feeling was not positive, but what we did with it is positive. You can check out, there's an article that has that's notes from Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's teaching on Tonglen that he gave at Columbus KTC way back in 1989. The notes from that teaching are online, and you can read about this exact method in there. And it's on lamakathy.net, L-A-M-A-K-A-T-H-Y, lamakathy.net. Thank you, Tom Earlywine, for creating that website for all those things. And you can download the teaching called Tonglen in Everyday Life. And that's notes from Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's teaching on Tonglen. So if I've made any mistakes, he will fix them. That's something that we can be sure of. So because of the time, we're running low on time. And I want to thank everybody for your patience with all of the kind of technical glitches. I'm still trying to learn how to use two platforms simultaneously so that it doesn't look as weird as it looks, but that'll take a little while. But in the meantime, what you can do is do your best to try to establish some kind of everyday meditation practice. Just do some kind of thing, whether it's taking a walk outdoors and relaxing your mind into the vastness of the sky, or whether it's, I think being outside now, I think the fact that weather is good now is like really positive, because we can go out and we can feel the warming air and see the sunshine, and it's going to help us in lots of ways. So we can get out and just blow the dust off, as my grandma used to say. We can do that, but also you can kind of blow the dust off in your mind. And one of the ways to do that is by training yourself to do some type of relaxation or meditation. And by being able to train yourself to do some kind of relaxation and meditation, this will give you some inner relief from those thought patterns that have, it seems helpful to have a negative thought pattern. I mean, you know, like, oh yeah, this is a bad situation and all, but do we like have to stay there all the time? That's to me the really difficult thing. I kind of don't think so. And I think it's kind of bad for us. So anyhow, that's my soapbox for today as to why anger is not all it's cracked up to be. So try these practices and see if they work for you. Now, I'm just going to keep doing this on Sundays at 1 for the next few weeks. And I got a really interesting idea this week, and I want to see what you guys think. But I'd like to talk next week about how to use all this extra time we have to do some kind of spiritual retreat, if you want to call it that. I have this like imagination that we're going to have some kind of virtual retreat in the future where we do like a whole morning of just meditating and being together. But Until then, I'm going to talk about next week. I'm going to talk about turning quarantine into home retreat. I mean, you know, we can do it. Even if you just want to do it for one day, it'd be kind of fun. And then after that, we'll look at other topics. And and including Tonglen, and we can expand a little bit more on mind training, because I think the love and compassion aspect is, I think, going to help us more than anything else. And so I do want to respect your time. So I want to stop here for today. And look at this. I just love this. I wish you could see this is sitting on a tissue box. Okay. Anyway, thank you for your patience and your goodness. And if you want to support the webcast, you can go and subscribe on YouTube like it on Facebook and go to columbusktc.org, and make a donation, because we're trying to rebuild our center. So if you can express your gratitude for these broadcasts there, that would be just amazing. So, all right, let's sit quietly for just a moment and mentally dedicate the goodness of our session. We dedicate the goodness of this session to all who are suffering. We send our goodness out to them and make the aspiration that they're freed from suffering, that they come to happiness, and then to a spiritual transcendence. And coming to spiritual transcendence, may they emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings endlessly. We mentally dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you. I'll recite the short prayer in Tibetan, the Sonam Deyi. Sonam Deyi Tamche Zipani Tovne Ne Pedranam Panche Ne Cheka Na Chi Palab Drupayi Sipe Sule Drawar Drawar Sho Jampa Pawo Jitar Kempadam Kuntu Sampo Deyan De Shinde Deda Kungi Jesu Dalo Chinge Wadida Tamche Ratu. Okay. Thank you, everybody. And I'll see you next Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.